cancer.
Ralph.
Charles.
Paul.
Larry.
Robin Lynn. And I'm a Taurus. And I love listening to Vibes Live Radio. Thank you for keeping the vibes live.
Don't stop it and just get ready to jam with Disco Daddy Wide World of Hip Hop Radio Show every Saturday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, only on VibeLive.com with special guests every week. Don't miss it.
Hello out there, Disco Daddy here, and welcome to another edition of Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. If you've been following us, you know that we've been interviewing legends and pioneers of this now worldwide culture that we call hip hop. People who you may not have heard of, but who are legendary nonetheless. Legendary doesn't mean famous, and famous doesn't mean legendary. Okay, we've got a mixture of both. Today we have a queen. By any measure, okay, a true queen of our culture. Her name is Medusa, and she's a multifaceted, multi-talented artist and a beautiful human being. I've been blessed to participate in a couple of shows with her, and she's a fantastic performer on top of all of that. So today we're going to get into the story of a queen that you may not have heard of. She's very popular, and she is known worldwide. However, her story may not be. Today you're going to hear from Medusa herself, her story about her life and how she got into hip-hop and basically what she's doing now, because she is still very active in the business and she is still performing and still out there on the grind, okay? Welcome to Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip-Hop, Medusa.
Thank you, Disco Daddy. Let me start by saying happy birthday, loved one.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You know, it's an honor to be interviewing you on my birthday. That's like a special birthday gift, okay?
Yeah, I feel special. I feel like it's my birthday.
So how have you been, Queen?
I've been blessed, you know, just moving and motivated and agitating the maker, you know?
Okay. Okay, well, today it's all about you. For the next half an hour, I'd like you to start at the beginning of your life and tell the story in a condensed version on all the important things and people you want to shout out to who helped you along the way and maybe the ones who didn't. And, you know, there's haters out there you might want. We don't have to get into any negative stuff, you know, but I'm just saying, let's hear the story of Medusa from her. Medusa, ladies and gentlemen, on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip-Hop.
You know, I think you always have to start when you're dealing with music on what influenced you to be involved in it in the first place. Mm. And it wasn't just hip-hop. It was my auntie. She was a singer with the Undisputed Truth.
Wow.
And, you know, the
smiling faces sometimes.
Say again?
Smiling faces sometimes. That was
exactly, exactly.
Okay.
She was on tour. Their group was on tour with the Jackson 5.
Wow.
And I was 7 years old. She came and picked me up in a limousine. I used to go to the studio with her, and she took me on this West Coast tour with her with the Jackson 5.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to see, yeah. So I was able to see the behind the scenes as a seven-year-old, the musicianship, the camaraderie that you have backstage.
You met a young Michael Jackson.
Oh, yeah. I met all the Jacksons. My auntie at the time was dating Jermaine Jackson.
Wow.
And, yeah, so it was just an interesting upbringing.
Okay.
You know, my uncle played percussion in the group as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what pulled me into wanting to actually write music.
Wow.
So I have to give all praises to God putting me in a family of other musicians.
And you started at the top, actually.
it felt right. And okay. During that time, you know, that was a time frame of music. You got Earth, Wind, and Fire. You got the Isley Brothers. You got, you know, the Tina Marie's, the I mean, you name it. I mean, come on, the list
and
goes
the
on.
Newtown stuff is popping at that time. Yeah, too.
That music raised me, okay. You know. So coming into my teens, I'm still looking at Soul Train. And on Soul Train, you see the Lockers. You see the Poppers. Mm.
Right.
So hip hop for me was pop locking.
Hmm.
So I'm that kid in junior high school trying to lock and jump in the air and land on my booty, do the pancake.
What year is this? It's very important. We try to keep a chronology here for future historians that you started doing this.
I was actually locking in the sixth grade.
Mm-hmm.
So
you don't have to tell on yourself if you don't want to. You get that's good enough.
Okay. I mean, I figure if people do the math, they can do it. I'm condensing here. I don't have to
okay,
give numbers.
I got you.
So it went from pop locking, mm-hmm. and I mean when I say that, all through my teens. So
right.
You're talking the 80s. I'm ditching school. I'm living in
you're
Pomona.
Serious.
Being Pomona, ditching my last two periods so that I can go to L.A. and
wow.
battle Garfield High,
wow.
battle Boogaloo Shrimp. And you know, I became a part of a crew called the Groovatrons only because they pulled up in front of my school in the Pinto Club, pulled
but
a
Boogaloo
a
Shrimp was, I hate to interrupt you, but Boogaloo Shrimp was active back then. He hadn't done a movie yet, but was he or had he?
He was active. He was in a crew itself. You know, this
okay.
was huge. We used to pop lockers used to meet and battle on sets at the skate depot. You name it. Everywhere we can catch each other. And you know
okay.
it's bad when kids
right.
are ditching to catch you coming out of at school just to battle you in pop locking.
I'm telling you, okay.
Not fighting, not gangbanging, not trying to start no mess, just
right.
battle pop.
Right, I got you.
And there were clubs out here called Radiotron.
Mm-hmm.
In Pasadena, there was Backstreet. You know,
okay.
a lot of young clubs happened at a lot of skating rings. So these were our outlets. When
this
we got
was like
then.
83, around 82, 83.
81, all of that, 80, 81, 82, and 83.
Gotcha, okay.
So,
now you were there. I just want to interject. Radiotron was the fertile ground. I consider it probably the birthplace of hip hop because it was a place that allowed people who were the young people who were into this new genre. It probably by 82, 83, it had a name hip hop, but before that, basically, it was a place for breakers, rappers, DJs, and everything to come together, and it formed the basis, the foundation of the L.A. hip-hop scene, and you were part of that.
Definite.
Mm-hmm.
I was one of those out in Westwood pop-locking on the streets. I was at Venice Beach pop-locking, you
mm-hmm.
know, and every time a Radiotron happened, if we can make it, we were there.
Mm-hmm.
If the sports arena was popping with Uncle Jam's Army, we were there. You know, that's how I know about the Time Bandits, Heckel and Jekyll. You know, when the set of breaking happened, do you know how many pop lockers and breakers showed up so that they could get down with that? Do you know how many came from all over Los Angeles? Every part, Pomona, San Bernardino, Pasadena, the Valley, and all of L.A.
Okay.
showed up for this, you know, and dressed accordingly,
right.
you know.
Right.
So that being a part of what I was doing in hip-hop, of course, when Rapper's Delight came out, I was like, that wordplay, I have to be a part of that.
Huh.
You know, I already
tried rapping before the record came out. I mean, actually, the record sort of spurred everybody into rapping, but had you, there were certain, you know, I guess no. Nobody really knew about rapping until if you didn't live in New York too much about that. But did you use the name Medusa from the time you started your career?
No. As a pop locker with the Groovatrons, I was known as Lady Tick Tut.
Okay.
You know, usually you were named after the best moves you had. Mm. So I was a hard picker, and I had a couple studs.
Okay. At what point did you pick up? Now, you hear Raptors Delight, you decide you can do that, okay? Much as it was the same thing with me when I heard that. I was a DJ already, but I said, you know what? I was doing a little teeny rhymes. I said, I can do that. And that was what sparked me, that same record. So at what point did you start, and what point did you start becoming Medusa?
Well, I became Medusa. You know, there was a spurt after high school where I decided I'm going to be a hustler. And in that hustle mode, and you know, I won't speak on the hustle because it definitely wasn't drugs, but it was something that could really, you know, probably still get me in trouble to this day. But
it was about some paper, and we all need that at times. So hey,
you feel me?
My book.
So I ended up getting caught up in my hustle. And did some jail time.
Right.
And when I got out, I promised myself that I would never end up in that situation again. Mm-hmm. And I had to choose what my passion was. Mm-hmm. And my passion was always music, always. Mm-hmm. So when I got out, my cousin Coco picked me up, and we went to a studio. Mm-hmm. And we chilled there for about 2 days with a friend of ours. And her and I created this group called SIN, S-I-N, Strength in Numbers. Hmm. And the first song we wrote was Power of the P, Power of the Pussy. That was, and you're talking about the beginning of the 90s. So you better believe that we were the first to write a hip-hop song about the power of the P.
Gotcha. All right. East Coast or West?
Yes, indeed.
Yes,
so,
man. All right.
So we went.
What was your partner's name again? Medusa?
Coco.
Coco, was it Medusa and Coco?
Medusa and Coco, indeed.
Okay.
And we performed The Power of the P for the first time at the Good Life Cafe.
Hmm.
And, yeah.
Well, I got to slow you there because you got to explain to our audience. I know what the Good Life was and what it meant in impact, but you got to go into that for a second, explain what the Good Life was, and then I'll remind you, okay, to take up where you performed at the Good Life. But go into that and explain to you how important the Good Life was, just like the Radiotron. This is another era. This is 10 years later.
Exactly. And that's, you know, I'm going to go right into it for you. Trust and believe that.
Okay.
So the Good Life Cafe was the place where all of the underground artists, everybody that's practicing and working on their craft would come and showcase their new rhymes, showcase their new styles.
On Crenshaw Boulevard in L.A.
Yes, this was in L.A. on Crenshaw and Exposition.
Right.
A lady by the name of B. Hall had started this spot. And it was actually a health food location. I ended up staying around the corner from it not too long after that, and I used to frequent it just for my health food goods. But the key with the Good Life Cafe is these youngsters weren't allowed to cut. So you had to be very crafty with your vocab if you were going to step up in the Good Life Cafe.
They had freestyle sessions on the weekends, right?
Every Thursday.
Every Thursday.
It would be ridiculous. Pouring out into the parking lot to where most people couldn't even get in. And if you didn't sign the list, you weren't going to be seen on the stage.
Mm.
So you're talking about a location that fit about 75 people, and outside there'd be 100 people.
Mm.
And if you didn't get to floss and get your ego off on the stage that night, there were plenty of he's standing out in that parking lot waiting to battle.
Man.
Yeah.
That was the good life in the early 90s in L.A., the Good Life Cafe. Just for a second before you go back to your performance, can you name some of the people and groups who've come out of that?
Definitely. You're talking about Volume 10, Supernatural, Farside, Pigeon John. I've seen Ice Cube stick his head up in there and listen. You know what I'm saying? I've seen Fat Joe step on the stage up in there.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, Ava DuVernay was a part of a group
The female director, the black female director.
Absolutely. Called Figures of Speech. So that's how I actually know Ava DuVernay, and that's how she created the film This Is the Life.
Wow.
Yeah. It was pretty phenomenal. Freestyle Fellowship. Wow. I mean,
I just wanted people to understand that this was the place to be, a very fertile, percolating, creative spot for hip-hop in the early 90s. And in steps Medusa.
We are performing the power of the P. Mm-hmm. And we're really just testing it out to see if we even have something. So we got our head wraps on, we're doing our thing, mm-hmm. and we blew the spot up that night, just killed it. Right. And from that point on, we started working with a producer that is pretty big in the underground LA scene named Fat Jack.
Mm.
Yeah, so with Fat Jack, we started creating a lot of different cuts. We got signed with, what was the name of that back in the day? So many labels.
Local label or major?
No, it was major. Southwest. Bam. Okay. There we go.
Okay.
So we were recording an album with Southwest, and a lot of things were happening in L.A. hip-hop during that time.
Mm-hmm.
So we're working on albums, we're doing shows, we're on stages with the likes of Lady of Rage, The Last Poets, Watts Prophet.
Man.
It was pretty heavy. I can continue, but, this is that synth movement.
Right.
Now we come a little closer to the present. And Coco, my partner, has decided to go to Atlanta, and here Medusa is by herself, and I am not going to stop doing what I do as an MC.
Okay.
I became an aggressive spitter and was known to wreck a few worlds when it came to battle in those freestyle cyphers.
Right on.
From that point on, I just started recording myself with Fat Jack and Youssef Flow, a brother that was with a group called The Nonce. I used to sell mixtapes, but now I'm an MC. But Youssef Flow passed away some years ago, God rest his soul. And from that point on, I just kept digging. Every cipher, everything that was available for me to go to, I made sure I was there. Mm-hmm. Every battle that came my way, I made sure I did that. Mm-hmm. And in poetry, I was a poet as well. A lot of people don't know that. And then some people in the poetry scene only know me as a poet.
Wow.
So in that poetry scene, I ran into Michelle and Degiacello. And
the bass player, the female bass player.
Indeed.
Like, I'm hip to her music.
Yeah, I started working with her. But more than anything, she had a opportunity to do music for the Tupac movie Gridlock.
Wow.
And she passed on it and passed the opportunity to me.
Wow.
So I was able to write the music that they performed in Gridlock.
Wow.
And so I had, I was able to sit with Tandy Newton at that time, with Tupac. You know, I was friends with Regina King as well, so I would always be on a set somewhere just to see what's going on, see what's popping, who's doing what.
You did the Gridlock. You're going to make me go out here now and dig through my collection just to watch that movie again. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, producer. Producer, y'all, the fantastic stories, all real on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. Continue, my lady.
So from that point on, I started getting a lot of fans, and I was always connected to that soul upbringing. So I created a band. I believe I was the first in L.A. to have a live band with hip-hop.
Okay.
And I can say that in all honesty and confidence.
And I can back you up because I ain't never seen it. And I've never seen it either. I've been around a long time, okay? So, yes, ma'am, you got that.
Yeah.
What was the name of the band?
Medusa and Feline Science.
Okay.
I had three beautiful female background singers and an incredible band.
Mm.
And as time went on, people like Ahmad and Macy Gray would call me and ask me to do free shows, mm-hmm. or ask me to get them a couple of musicians. Mm-hmm. And these are things that I would do, you know, just being a part of the collective in L.A.
Right.
And within that, I mean, it just allowed me access to do a lot of different shows and get some great exposure with my band.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of folks that would come out to L.A., I would be privy to open for. Mm-hmm. I've performed with the likes of KRS-One. From KRS-One to Roy Ayers. Let's put it like that.
Look at
you know everything in between.
Ain't no light, right? That's why you're on this show, not only because of the amount of respect other people in the business have for you, because you have some real stories to tell. Have you ever considered writing a book about your life and experience?
Absolutely. I'm actually working on a series right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can visually see my story.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, so just stay tuned for it.
Oh, believe me. As soon as you give me the word, hey, I'm gonna be posting it everywhere because I'm about backing not only my brothers and sisters in hip hop, but the sisters especially. Y'all have a hard row. You know what I'm saying? And I know how it is. I was a farmer for a brief period of my life. You know what I'm saying? And when you're out there in the sun and you're trying to make things grow. And you're actually on the grind. It's hard. So, you know, I like to help. And I like to let you know that the kings appreciate the queens. You understand?
Thank you. That's to hear out of a man's voice, you know?
Thank you. Continue with your fascinating story, though, sister. You got your band together. And you're performing with people now. We get into probably a period now where we've crossed the 2000 line and coming up into the very modern times and everything. Now, I know you're still out there and you're still performing,
yes.
still active and everything. How do
yes,
people...
But in the 2000s, during that time, the beginning of, I was performing a lot at a place called the Temple Bar. Okay. The Temple Bar is in Santa Monica. And anybody from Bilal, Michelle and Degnatello, you know, it really quality band acts would show up at the Temple Bar, and mm-hmm. I was a regular there once a month.
Mm-hmm.
I had a woman by the name of Cheryl Dunier who used to come and see my show, and she asked me if I would be a part of a movie, an HBO film called Stranger Inside.
Mm.
So I was also fortunate enough to act and do music for that film. If you guys aren't familiar with it, I know a lot of people are and a lot of people aren't. It's a cult classic, but Stranger Inside, it's a women's prison film.
Stranger Inside, okay. I'm going to check that out.
Yeah, and it's pretty powerful.
Okay,
it's
now do you write music? I mean, write, you know, note for note? Or how are you what is your creative process?
Not note for note, but creative process would be I know how to convey to a musician to get what I want.
There you go. Gotcha. That's a gift. That's a gift. You know what I'm saying? Because you have to be able to hear exactly what you want to convey it.
Exactly.
Right.
And you know what? I didn't realize how much of a gift that was until recently working with some major musicians. And when I left the room, they told each other, like, she conveys it like she knows exactly what she's doing, like she is a musician. And I'm just doing my best with what I have. So that meant everything to me, and I look at myself as more of a professional when I work with musicians now.
Beautiful.
You know.
Beautiful.
So from that point, now I have a little acting under my belt.
Mm-hmm.
I also did an episode of Moesha. Because they knew me as a poet, I got called to do this. And it was called Run, Moesha, Run. So myself and Moesha actually battled in their little cafe, me as the poet, and I chased her through this whole segment, trying to rebattle her.
Okay.
So after that, I continued with the band and Feline Science. And I've really been blessed to do some incredible shows. So now we're in the now. Cool. And so the music that's happening now is me working with Aloe Black facilitating me and the Dap Kings.
Mm.
Uh, I'm also working on a project of my own with DJ Ice, because there are some heavyweight songs that we perform and I never have them for people to buy.
Wow.
So we're finishing up an EP right now of a set that we perform that people really dig.
Okay.
In addition to that, I am writing a series pertaining to my life, and I'm still chasing hardcore beats. I'm getting beats from Battle Cat. I have a few projects out there that are available. Corsets and cufflinks, Where's the DJ Booth? And these are things, I mean, I have a catalog, if you can imagine.
Beautiful.
That, you know, a catalog.
Beautiful.
So when I see these youngsters get on, you know, online and you know, they spitting and you know, I can just dig in a file and kill them. Dig in a file, you know. It's nothing. And I speak that, I'm giving myself chills because I speak that with confidence.
There you go.
There are not many that can stand next to what I do. You can ask a DJ Quick. You can ask a Dr. Dre. You can ask DJ Pooh.
You can ask DJ Disco Daddy. Because I second that emotion. You are bad, okay? You are multi-talented, multifaceted lady. Now, this is the thing. I have two questions. Can you say something about Project Bloat? Explain what Project Bloat is.
Now, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because a lot of people think that Project Bloat is its own entity. This is L.A. Mm-hmm. If you are connected in an underground scene, it's all connected, mm-hmm. like the roots of a tree.
Okay.
So Project Bloat was somewhat of a spinoff of Good Life, the Good Life Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Ben Caldwell, who actually owns Chaos Network, was doing some things at the same time as the Good Life Cafe that lended a space for other MCs and poets.
Right.
But it didn't really start jumping off until after the Good Life. So that was kind of the graduation of youngsters that didn't want to curb their tongue anymore, wanted to be grown, you know, be able to spit and cuss and, you know, and create their own thing.
Right.
So there was Project Blow right there in Leimert Park. And I lived in Leimert Park for 22 years.
Wow.
So Project Blow was my spot in the world stage, all of the Fifth Street Dicks, all of the phenomenal places over there.
I played chess out there just about every night. I probably seen you, didn't know you then, you know, because I had forgot all about hip-hop by the 90s, but that was my chess spot. I'm a chess player.
Yes, yes.
Medusa, this has been a joy, okay?
Oh.
We've got a few minutes left, and
Indeed.
I want you to tell people how they can get to download, purchase your music, you know, download some of your creations, your artistic creations, like your videos and stuff like that, and where they can purchase your music on the internet, how they can get in contact with Medusa.
You can always catch me at thegangstagoddess.com. That is the best tool. And, of course, you know, I'm on Instagram as Legend Medusa.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on Facebook as Medusa Cali Frame.
Mm-hmm.
But that Gangsta Goddess, you get to see a little bit of me growing up on that site.
Okay.
And I can't stress enough, come see me live. Buy a CD hand-to-hand. Have a conversation with me.
Seeing you live is a joy. I mean, you're electric. That's the best way I can describe it, because you combine everything, all the elements, the pop lock, and your writing is on hit. Everything that you write has impact. I mean, you can tell that you've been doing what you've been doing almost all your life. It comes through because you are a queen. If you were a man, you'd be called a master. You understand?
Thank you, my Lord. Thank you.
That's Medusa, okay, in a nutshell, the way from what I've seen and gotten to know you as a performer, been on stage with you, you're electric. You're an electric lady. Now, hello?
Yes.
Oh, okay. No. Okay. We have an incoming call. I'm just going to end that. Oh, just keep talking through it. Okay. Hello. You still here?
I'm Yeah, I'm still
okay,
here.
I would like to explain for the women. What I want to say, I want to ask you, where did you get the name Medusa? I know you told me when, but what made you choose that name?
Well, you know, Medusa turned a whack MC to stone. That's the first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my young mind was there. And then I looked Medusa up in an old dictionary from the 1920s, and it said that it was the way a jellyfish swims, that it's formless, it's free-flowing,
it's called
a Medusa form.
Wow, with the tentacles flowing behind it, pushing it up through the water, it does flow. Wow, okay. Wow.
You know, in addition to that, you know, she was one of five sisters who was a goddess, and her power was to, you know, create truth. You know, with her spit,
right.
Her truth can stone you. It can freeze you, make you think.
Took out. Okay. Medusa, we want to thank you for your time. We want to thank you for your contribution to hip-hop. You're truly a queen. You're a master performer, male or female. Nobody could touch you if they stood next to you on stage. I don't want to go on after Medusa.
Thank God.
We love you, and we want your career to continue to blossom. And thank you for coming on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop.
Thank you, Disco Daddy, for having me, just for calling and reaching out. And I want to say something to the gangster goddesses out there. You ladies, gangster your position, but keep your integrity as a queen.
Look out. Look out. Medusa, y'all on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. Peace.
So wasn't it a great show? Come back next week, every Saturday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Central Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop show. Man, it's a great one. Epic, epic. See you next week. Bye.
Thank you for keeping the fly fly.
Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop would like to send a big shout out to the First Lady of Hip Hop, MC Sha-Rock. Sharon Jackson, as a pioneering female, you set a standard and opened doors. We may never fully gauge the depth of your influence on hip-hop as a culture. Salute with full honors, Queen Sha-Rock.
So nice, so that's what I like.
I say the hip-hop, we just don't stop it, and just get ready to jam. With Disco Daddy, Wide World of Hip-Hop Radio Show. Every Saturday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, only on 5Live.com. With special guests every week. Don't miss it.
'Hello out there, Disco Daddy here, and welcome to another edition of Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. If you've been following us, you know that this month of September, we've been honoring all of our queens, queens of the cultures, ladies who have been down with hip hop from day one. Joining me on this very special edition is my producer, Miss Robin Lynn Maben.
Good morning.
And we're going to be taking up the next 30 minutes just explaining a little bit of why we're doing this show and also what's coming up for the next month and what we plan on doing with Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop in the future. And Ms. Maben is also going to be telling us about Vibes Live, the company that she founded, and also Robin Lynn Productions, and what that's all about so that our listeners can get familiar with exactly the type of machinery it takes to put these shows together and the talented people who are involved, including herself. Ms. Maben, how are you doing today?
I am doing great today. Thank you so much for having me on your show as well as allowing me to produce your show.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Well,
yes.
Before we step off into what we're doing with the Wide World of Hip Hop, why don't you give us some background on yourself, Robin Lynn Productions, and Vibes Live, and the people involved that you're working with other than myself on your varied projects. It's Robin Lynn Mabin.
Oh, my goodness. It's very difficult for me to be on this end answering the questions because I'm so used to, you know. But Vibes Live is a community of casters, broadcasters from all over the world. And we love music, the arts, you know, all of that. And what we do is we get together in a chat room environment, and we just appreciate and love the music. And so from that, it's grown into radio stations, podcasting network, original talk shows, as well as syndicated talk shows on the network, 24-hour music radio stations, and just I can't even find the words to really explain and express to the fullness what's going on over here. It's so beautiful, and just words, and just you have to experience it. You know, maybe you can tell them better than I can.
Well, on my end, experiencing working with you guys, including Mr. Edwin Douglas, has been a joy for me because basically a man or woman can have a vision, but to put that vision into practical application as far as the things that we're doing, it takes a dedicated and talented team of people. And luckily, I ran into some through my friend DJ Antron, who I'm going to thank profusely forever. So, basically, also, Vibes Live. Tell us a little bit about Vibes Live, Robin Lynn.
Oh, my goodness. 24-hour radio station. We play all genres. And then the radio station, Vibes Live, also hosts my talk shows, Vibes Live Red Carpet Exclusives, with host comedian Edwin Douglas and myself. We've got original talk show, The Kevin and Nikki Show, Marvelous Milton Smith, How to Succeed in the Social Marketplace, The Hatchet Chronicles. Oh, and Vibes Live is also working on projects such as fundraising and artist management. And we're putting on events. And I don't even know. I need to get back to work. Stop asking me questions.
Okay. You guys are busy.
And Vibes Live is the baby of Baby Production from Robin Lynch Productions. And Robin Lynch Productions is an education, entertainment, network, and support services. And so with that, I've been going around providing tech support and networking and utilizing my network and making that available to artists and people in the industry or anyone on the internet, basically. And then we focus in on building in infrastructure or whatever kind of support that they might need, anything on the net, and we specialize in helping others expand. So, and we're the only ones out here that's doing it. And so it's kind of hard to say just what we do, but what working with different ministries, different radio stations, different record labels, book authors, film directors, songwriters, you name it. So what we do is we are able to see where you're lacking, and then we come in and we will bring it to you. We'll build up the infrastructure up underneath you and, you know, do the promotion, the marketing, and specializing in helping you, your product, your services expand. Yeah, and I'm real good at it. Real good at it.
Look out. So if someone gets an idea, let's say, for a show, and they contact Robin Lynn Productions, what is the process that do you, first of all, weigh whether they have an idea that's worthy of a show, if it's worthy of putting work in on it? How does that process work? How do you decide who to back and who to pass on?
It's amazing the opportunities that come, but how it would happen is someone would call me and they would have their idea and they'd say, hey, you know, I want to do a show. Some people didn't even have that idea, such as Kevin and Nikki, and I reached out to them and said, hey, do you want to do a show? And then what I like to do on my network is let the host be involved in the conception and the development. And so I'll use Kevin and Nikki for an example. Actor Kevin D. Benton and actress Nikki Warren, they're just very, very dynamic. And the two of them, they work together a lot. And so I said, I wonder if... So I approached them and said, hey, you guys, would you guys like to do a show? And they said, let us think about it. And then they came back and they go, yes. And so I told them, okay, you guys think of a title. You think of what you want your show to be, what you want to do, like that. And then they came back with their, you know, with their format. You know, they said, well, we want to name it the Kevin and Nikki Show on Vibes Live. Boom. Good, because that's okay. Well, and then they said, well, we're going to interview people and we're going to have topics and like this. Boom. And so... So how it works is we sit down, we create, develop an idea, and then we structure it into a format. Then we set a schedule for recording it, and then I edit it, and it goes from there. And speaking of the editing, so very happy to announce that Frank Hatchett, he's a Grammy Award-winning producer and engineer. They took the Grammy for the Miseducation of Lauryn Hill album. Well, he is on Vibes Live on Robin Lynn's Productions team, and he's doing the producing and engineering of all of our products that go out. So,
wow, that is huge. That is very, very huge.
How you like
so you're
it?
Going you're going along full steam. Creatively, I have to say that we're honoring queens of hip-hop, but you, Robin Lynn Maven, are a queen, a mass media maven. Without you, without you, my show probably wouldn't even be off the ground. It wouldn't be anywhere near as popular as it's becoming, Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip-Hop. And I've got to say that working with you has been a joy.
Wow.
You're a very good creative lady, and I got to give you props. This is the month we're celebrating our queens. I'm just going to throw you right on in there with the rest of them.
Oh, thank you. Wow.
Okay, thank you very much.
Wow. And, I accept.
All of this is because of you. So I'm on top of the world right now. I'm able to think of ideas and not have to worry about the daily a technical thing, and I have people that call and compliment you, actually, on your production and what you're doing, and for standing behind people like myself who can basically just come up with ideas. That's what I'm good for.
Yeah.
And you've brought it to life for me, so I have to thank you, Robin Lynn Maven. You really are special.
Well, you are certainly very, very welcome. And I just want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to try to help you.
Well, we're going to explain to the people now what we're doing. Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop is a show that I've wanted to do for a while. Interviews with legends, not just famous. There's a difference between being famous and being a legend. If you're a legend or pioneer, there's an implication that you've done something to deserve those particular designations. You can be famous and not be legendary at all. Okay, you can be internet famous, 15 minutes, and not be legendary. We interview people who have not only grown up with hip-hop, but contributed to the very foundation from the beginning in one way or the other, either as an artist, a promoter, producer, DJ, MC, B-boy, B-girl, but they've been there from the beginning, and they have interesting stories to tell and a lot of information to give out. And in the future, I'm talking 50, 100 years down the road, we'll all be dust, but these interviews will live, and they'll paint a complete picture. If you listen to them in total, you get basically a complete picture of what the flavor of hip-hop was like before records, before any recordings were being made. And that's one thing we also do on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip-Hop. We let people know that there are two histories. There's a history of hip-hop before records, which began recording 78, 79, and a history after, because actually recordings, once they began, changed the entire game, changed the entire landscape of what was happening and percolating in New York City from the early 70s. Most of the male names are known. Kool Herc, Coke LaRock, Clark Kent, the L Brothers, you know. Most of the males from the beginning, Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, with no Curtis Blow. They were around before records and after, but we do know their names. Many of the sisters, many of the queens who contributed mightily to this culture have been forgotten by hip-hop. If they didn't get survive the pre-record period and get into recording and get some records out there, they were basically buried by history. So, besides the brothers who did have a huge role to play, the ladies, the queens were there from the very beginning. Many of them didn't get their due. So we're going to rectify all of that, and that's what we've been trying to do. In 1 month, you can't bring everybody back to life, but you can point out some sisters who are prime examples of the work that was being done before records. And again, we say New York City because basically since hip-hop was born there, most of the queens, most of the kings who emerged during that period are from New York or New Jersey, tri-state area. We will be getting into legendary figures from the West Coast also, which just lags just a few years behind the East Coast in our push to attain some recognition out here. And what we've done with the hip-hop. So we want to thank, and I hope I don't leave any names out, first of all, MC Sharon Sharrock, okay? She's the first female MC in hip-hop, certified, vetted, recognized. And this show, because she could not be on this show, we've interviewed her in the past, but she could not do this show because the Funky Four plus one more are involved in a biopic, and they're going to be doing a publicity push after their project is completed. But we want her to know that she is thought of in every interview that we do, every broadcast. MC Sharrock, Darren Jackson, we love you. We want to thank you for your contributions to hip-hop, being females, the first female MC in hip-hop. And many of the ladies who we're interviewing, in fact, all of them are her friends. And she's such a gracious person that when we approached her with what we were doing, she said, you know, my lady friends don't get the recognition. I had to step back and let them get the recognition for this, and because we're going to be doing other things with her in the future. And I really, that let me know right there what a true queen is. All right, she stepped back into the shadow just so that her lady friends could have an extra slot and we could try to fit them all in for September. So we've done our best. We have Miss Toy, West Coast hip-hop legend, on the second half of this show. and this hour. And she is truly a legend. She's recorded with Ice Cube and quite a few of West Coast legendary people. And she goes back to a time when West Coast hip-hop was just actually breaking and catching on with, through Dr. Dre, N.W.A., Cube, the beginning of West Coast hip-hop. She's legendary because she's a joy to work with. She's multi-talented, and she's also on the board of my artistic directors of the Hip-Hop Theater, which is another project that I'm working on. And I'm glad to be able to showcase her and her talents and her story on the show. We've also done DJ Lady Love. Coming up next week, we have MC Debbie D. Hooper along with Wanda D. And that's going to be special, a one-hour show, which is going to close off the month of September and the queens, the handful of queens that we assembled to honor. All of them are going to get suitable for framing letters of recognition from Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop and Robin Lynn Productions, recognizing their status as true queens of the culture. We've also done Cheryl LaPearl, Gail Hall, DJ Flame, and
goodness, we've had so many coming through there. Cheryl,
well, I don't have the list in front of me, right? I don't have the list in front of me. But and Sherry Cher, Baby
Sherry
D,
Cher, yes,
right, Mercedes Lady. Baby D is the first recognized female DJ in hip hop. Sharrock. Sharrock is the first female MC. Baby D is the first female DJ, and she had an interesting story with the creation of the Mercedes Ladies. All of our shows are archived, so if I'm leaving somebody out, all you got to do is click on that link that you're going to see in every post for the program that I make on the Michael Calfani page, and you click on the link, and you can go to any of our archived shows and just listen and get some knowledge, which is what this is really all about. There are so many misrepresentations going on in hip-hop. People, especially in New York, people like Van Silk, Kool Kyle, are trying to get the timeline straight. New York is such a big city, and before the age of the internet, when hip-hop was being laid, the foundation was being laid in the early 70s, people in the Bronx didn't really know what was going on in Brooklyn, and people in Brooklyn didn't know what was going on in Queens, and Queens didn't know what was going on in Manhattan and the Bronx. And so they're finding out that there were things that were happening in each borough almost simultaneously, so that one borough can't actually take credit for certain things that we've taken for granted through the history of hip-hop. And we're also discovering that there are people who flared up in the beginning like a bright star and then disappeared, but that brief time, like Disco Mario, Grandmaster Flowers, the brief period that they did exist, DJ AJ, cool DJ AJ, one of the DJs for Curtis Blow, in fact, one of his partners. These people had an effect on hip-hop and an influence that is still being felt. They're still talked about. Their names are still brought up in every interview that I do with any of the OGs. So Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip-Hop addresses the vacuum that has been created by time, actually, in history. On the internet now, you can find a lot of information on just about everybody except some of the early OGs of hip-hop. We're changing the game in that respect, thanks to Robin Lynn Maven Productions and Vibes Live. Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip-Hop is rapidly becoming the show to do. And in October, we're going to have legends that you've never heard of. There are legendary people. Again, right. Again, legend does not necessarily mean famous. Famous means that everybody knows your name. Legend means you've done something that deserves that title of legendary. We're going to kick off the month of October with Johnny Juice Rosado. Now, if you're in hip-hop, you know who Johnny Juice Rosado is. If you're not, you will after our first show in October. Johnny Juice Rosado was a DJ and one of the co-producers, probably what you would call an everything man, in the early creation of a group called Spectrum City, which later became Public Enemy, the most dangerous group, hip-hop group in the world, okay, led by Mr. Chuck D. Johnny Juice Rosado contributed mightily to the production of their first records, was their DJ, and for a long time, before they got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, he contributed ideas in the studio. You're going to hear his fascinating story of coming up and watching and helping Chuck D and Public Enemy blow up and go all the way to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. This is one of the people who are behind the scenes that you never really hear of, but when you listen to early Public Enemy, you're listening to Johnny Juice Rosado contributing to production. He's going to talk all about his story. We have other legends that you've never heard of. We have Mr. Michael Chuck coming up, who has the world's largest flyer collection. Now, in hip-hop, a flyer is your stamp, your certification that you existed, that you were around, that you did something in hip-hop in the early days before we did have an internet. This man has flyers, and he's been offered tons of money by people to buy his flyer collection. But, again, this is legendary, to collect flyers and have a complete, because that's the history of hip-hop right there. The flyers tell a story, at least in New York City, tri-state area, tell a story of the birth, some of the groups, when they appeared, the timeline from different boroughs. Flyers from different boroughs show what was happening in those boroughs at the same period of time. So the flyers are almost put together like a Bible, encyclopedic Bible of the history of hip-hop. Mr. Michael Chuck will be discussing, discussing why, first of all, he decided to do that and what he plans to do in the future with him. Right? What do you do with the world's largest flyer collection when you pass? Do you leave it to your children? Do you donate it to a museum? Okay. So we're going to have interesting guests like that from hip-hop, legends that you've never heard of and stories that you've never heard. So as we explore and as we grow, we hope that everyone stays with us. Anything that you see that says Vibes Live or Robin Lynn Productions on the internet, it'd be worth your while to stop and check it out if you're out there, you know, because she does have some interesting things going on under her umbrella. So you don't want to pass up something that might be informative and entertaining. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we want to thank you. We want to let you get on to the rest of our show, Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. I want to thank Miss Robin Lynn Maben, probably the world's greatest producer, okay, for hanging with me on this half an hour as we explain to the people what we're going to be doing. We want to thank you people who've been following us, who inbox me countless comments on how enjoyable or informative the show is. The moment we let you down, we want to hear that too. Okay, because we want to see you. Okay, we want to stay up, we want to stay on course, and we want to constantly entertain you. Okay, so without any further ado, Ms. Maben, I'm going to turn it over to you so we can bring out the lovely and talented, multi-talented Miss Toy, a true queen of the company.
All right, all right. Well, Everyone, thank you for tuning in and listening to Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. Stay tuned and enjoy the show.
Miss Sharon Shara Jackson, we love you.
Hello, I'm Robin Lynn Maven, the CEO, creator, and producer of Vibes Live. We have over 2 million geographical listeners reaching 200 countries with nonstop music 24/7. Just tune in on VibesLive.com.
Hello out there, Disco Daddy here. Welcome to another edition of Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. As you know, if you've been following me in September, from September 5th all the way through the end of the month, every Saturday we're honoring the queens of our culture, the sisters, our hip hop sisters who have been there beside us from the very beginning of hip hop. So we're going to take time. They're often overlooked, underpaid, and their contribution is minimized, but not on our show. And we're going to recognize them all through the month of September. Queens of our culture on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. This weekend, we have with us one of the West Coast queens of hip hop, Miss Toy. And if you live outside of Los Angeles, you may or may not have heard her name, but she's been around. She's been deeply involved in hip-hop most of her adult life. And she's going to tell us about her history, her life in hip-hop, and how she got involved, and what her future career plans are. Miss Toy, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Thank you for having me, Disco Daddy. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for agreeing to be on this show. I know you're very busy. Now, I didn't even want to try to pronounce your full name because I don't like to mess up people's names. So I wanted to just start with your full name and actually how you shortened it to Miss Toy. Why, it's very simple, actually. And then start at the beginning of you know, how you were born, where you were born, and tell us how you got into hip-hop. Miss Toy.
Oh, okay, my name is pronounced Toy Keon, of course, Toy for short. I was born in Chicago, Southside, Cook County Hospital. My mom said before I could talk, I was seeing Minnie Riperton and Chaka Khan. So on the journey from Chicago to Los Angeles, I grew up listening to Marvin Gaye and, you know, all type of oldies with my mom growing up in the 70s. And when I got to Los Angeles, I was about 11 years old. So I was introduced to hip-hop in the hood, you know, of Inglewood and the Bottoms and the Jungles and just all worldwide in Los Angeles. And my first song, while I was pretty much in middle school, I used to rap to Ice Cube and Yo-Yo's, you know, Bonnie and Clyde.
What years are you talking about? What years are you talking about your early exposure?
I'm early 90s, you know, with it because, you know, I'm Inglewood. I go to the schools that's in Inglewood and, you know, I go to the skating rink and hear all of these different tracks and stuff. And fortunate enough, I was able to meet, you know, Sir Jinx, like, before I even started in the rap game. So my journey was just at different parties. I would go to the DJ booth and go, you know, get the mic because some of the guys was my friends, you know. I danced. So I was in a rap group, hip-hop group called Thick and the Girls, and I was one of the background dancers. And the whole time I was in the group, every last person that was in the club would come to me like I was the person that had the microphone. So it really made me want to just study more on my music because I was like, hey, I'm a leader in this. I'm introducing the fans to the person that's actually rapping, you know. So I'm excited to be a part of hip-hop because I'm growing in it. You know, I have, you know, ties with Moke and Steph. They blew up and did some stuff with, you know, Outburst Records and Greedy Greg, and I was in the studio with them many times. And during this time, I just was sitting back, absorbing the game, soaking up a lot of game before I even touched the microphone. So when I started writing, The guy I dated, he had a limousine. And I showed up at school in the limousine, at the bank, at the grocery store. I was at the beach. Like, it was nothing to me to be, you know, rolling in California, sunshine, and just, you know, Hollywood. It, just everything before I was even Miss Toy. So he came home one day, and I was in there rapping, making up some rhymes and stuff, because I'm a natural poet. I love writing, you know. And so I'm writing, and he said, wow, the next time somebody get in my limo, I'm going to tell them about you. And he wrote, you know, he drove for a lot of celebrities, and I never was into that, so I really didn't care who he drove for, you know what I'm saying? Until it had something to do with me. And the next person that he had in his limo was Ronnie DeVoe's uncle, Brooke Payne. So that was my first manager who put me in the studio. My first studio experience was with Ronnie DeVoe. We did a song called Lifestyle and was the Rough and Sexy. And it was just a dope experience for my first studio experience to be in a professional environment.
But wait, okay, wait. Let me slow you down for a second. Let's dig into that for a minute. I mean, okay, so he gets this, he has somebody, he gets in his cat in his limo and got some connections or his producer, whatever. But there had to be an interaction. Did he come over and listen to your music? Were you introduced to him at the studio?
I went to a meeting. How this thing really came about. I had a meeting with Brooke Payne. I rapped in front of him, and then live was what it was all about. So I did my thing live, played him whatever music that I had on the instrumental on the tape. And then from there, he became my manager, seriously, and I went in the studio. It was just that fast, just how I'm telling you. And that's how You Can Do It came about. So that's why I'm going to get to that. But before that, I just appreciated being honored by the producer and being told that my voice was dope in the beginning, and you know, my style was creative, and you know what I'm saying? So it was like I had
You're very unique in the very beginning,
and I still have that now. So crossing over, I ended up getting called to the studio session with Emmanuel Dean, who was the producer for Militia. He did Burn, the single that's out.
What year was this?
From 1997, this is when my first, this is 96, but actually 97 is when Burn Remix came out, and I was a part of Militia. But I had already had a meeting in 96. I already met Dr. Dre. I already met Ice Cube. We had, you know, a session where Terry Carter was one of my good friends. You know, I had a meeting with Terry Carter, who was doing Heavyweight at the time, who loved my music, loved my style. I was really a part of his family. You know, rest in peace, Terry Carter. And he gave me Cube's number. He gave me Mac 10's number. He said, I don't know what to do with you, Toy. I'm going to have to go ahead and pass you on. You know, and so what he did was give me the numbers and let me go do my business. So I had a meeting with Ice Cube.
There you go.
And, and then so we played our music. I brought Mr. Tan with me. He's the, you know, the rapper on Baby Boy with Snoop.
Right.
And so we were in the middle of doing Militia at the same time we met Ice Cube. So we just went on with what was the engine, what was going. Red Ant wanted to sign us, you know, put us a part of this group that was, you know, making a lot of noise from, you know, the Bay Area. Lord G is from Detroit. I'm originally from Chicago. Tan is, you know, originally from New York, but we all are on the West Coast. So we, you know, formed a Voltron together. So we created a buzz, and I was the only female in this all-male group. So it really created a really good buzz for me as far as on the business side, because that's the part they don't know about me. I'm not just a rapper. I looked at all of these different situations, and I took those situations, and I built a rapport and a resume for myself as well as who was surrounding me. Now, whether they learned the lessons or not, that's on them. But I had to take a hard blow because I'm a female and I'm black and it's game. So, you know, and I don't sleep around to get where I got to go. God already directed me in this path before I could speak. So
we're going on this path
of music, and then I get called. You know, I'm already did Militia with the guys and all of that. It's great and everything. And now I have a single deal with Red Ant. I have a single deal with Red Ant. I go to Texas, try to do some shows, you know, to promote, you know, up-and-coming projects I have. But before I leave, you know, I'm working with a manager, me and Tan, but it's not really working out. I'm not getting no, you know, real business going on. So when I get called to this special session, which I got called by K-Mac from the Comrade in 99 to come and do the hook for Ice Cube, You Can Do It. Now I come to the studio. I tell him, where are you? He said, well, we're in Hollywood. Well, come and pick me up, because I wanted to pull up with him and walk in the door with him. You know what I mean? So when he come and pick me up from Inglewood, you know, he come and pick me up. You know what I'm saying? He did exactly what needs to be done. I show up with him. You know what I'm saying? Because he called me directly.
Right.
He's the only one in here that can make this call. So when I come in there, you know, I see Q because I met him already. Hey, Q, what's going on? What you need me to do? And so he tell me the hook and stuff. And so, you know, I go in the booth. And it's a lot of guys in here this day. And I don't, you know, I like pressure too when I'm in the studio. But I'm really like, I ignore everybody. I block everybody out. But this one comment from somebody said, do it sexy. Like, you know what I'm saying? It was like trying to talk to me in my head. I started blocking them out. And then I said, Q, what you need me to do? And so when I did the, you know, the hook for him, he told me he liked my voice and stuff. So I just, after I was done, I seen the producer that was there. I didn't really meet him at the time one night, but he looked very curious, like, what was this going to turn out to be? So two weeks later, because I told him to take me home right after I was done, because it was too many people in the studio, first of all. I don't get down, you know, I don't have time to be meeting everybody and trying to prove nothing. Right, so I leave, you know, like a diamond in the rough. 2 weeks later, he's single. And
wow.
Then next thing you know, I'm on tour with him, and then the 10-year anniversary for NWA happens, and then Dr. Dre invites us on the Up and Smoke tour, and then we're still, you know, where I get a record deal, you know what I'm saying, from being on that song with Universal. So as we move forward, I dropped, you know, my first album with Universal in October 2001, and September 11 happened. So even after my success and being able to be the first female rapper from the West Coast to co-executive produce my own first solo album, I had an R&B budget. They spent $1.7 million on my project, and then they gave me a paid release when after September 11 happened, but still dropped my album. They invested a lot of in marketing. You know, I was in all type of hair magazines, had my own potato chips, rap snacks, you know, and just learned a lot from being in the business, like, okay, now what do I do next? You know, when they give me all of my stuff and put it in my lap, now what do I do with my own stuff if you give me my own rights back, you know?
Before you go further on what you did do, what is your feeling about the treatment of female, black female entertainers as when you're dealing with, well, now the record industry has changed, but there's still a contractual agreement to be made to do shows. Do you feel there's a different way that you're dealt with being a black female? Of course, everybody respects your talent, and I'm going to say to the audience out there, Ms. Toy is a beautiful, physically beautiful black woman, so she could have anything, anybody she wanted to, but she obviously must love her craft. So I'm going to ask you, because you do love this hip-hop culture that we're into, what is the difference you feel between the way you're dealt with as a black female and the way male acts are dealt with?
At this time, you know, I feel that, you know, I'm dealt with a different way, being in a power position now, that when people don't have their ducks in a row, they don't talk to me. They don't come to me at all anymore. But before, you know, I knew that people would like to waste time because they want to hang out. They want to see, you know, get familiar. So now I don't let people get over familiar with me until they're ready to do business. Now, men can hang out with each other, go out, go to the game, go to the club and hang with each other. And they'll take a long time to do business with each other, but they'll still do business with each other. But then if a woman like me, if I'm hanging out with you, then they find a reason not to do business, and then things don't go right. So I just find, you know, where you're not trying to be your best friend, but if we do business, I'm your best blessing. You know what I'm saying? So I have to keep myself a little valued and secure and more, you know, accessible. Because if I'm always available, then they think they don't have to pay me, then they don't think my information is valuable. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So Daddy, it's not right,
but
at the same time, you have a lot of females who will go hang out with the producers and the artists in the studio all day, and then they don't have nothing going on. Then they don't know nothing about their publishing. Then they sit in there just excited to take pictures with people, but that's not my lane. I can't tell them that that's not what's helping us. You know what I'm saying? That's what's hurting us.
Right. And now let me ask you that, because I was about to ask you that and you stepped on it before I could get to it. As far as a female, like, you're a businesswoman. You also operate other businesses and things I've watched you on Facebook. And you have your shit together as far as publishing, knowing your rights to your music, patents and things like that. Do you also feel that there is a dearth And what I mean that among, like what you said, there are a lot of females who just love taking the selfies and being around, and they really don't have that business end of their career together. They may be very talented, but you do. Do you find that also because you, when you walk into a situation nowadays, you have all of your publishing, everything all together, that you find that there is a resistance to dealing with a boss? Do you understand what I'm telling you? You're obviously in control of your...
Absolutely. I mean, our intellectual property is important. So, of course, if you see, you know, our great leaders being killed off because they're giving us some game that we didn't get, then obviously they want to hide and cover up things that are, you know, lucrative to us growing. And so when you can't stop someone from telling someone the absolute honest truth, this is why we can't work together. This is why I would love to work with you as a black business owner. You own yourself as a music owner, but if you don't take it as a business, then don't be mad at me because I don't want to do business with you. I'm on a hit single that's going to pay me for the rest of my life. I would like to have one of those of my own. If I'm serious about what I'm doing, I will possibly make another one of my own before my time is up. You know what I'm saying?
There,
so while I'm making all of these songs with these producers, I'm honoring those producers because they deserve to have those hits because I'm on one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on several songs that are great songs. You know what I'm saying? So if I could get paid off of one for the rest of my life and invest in myself from that song, I could continue to own other business. Like, I'm a massage therapist, yes. I am a consultant, yes. I do have other things that I do. You know what I'm saying? To make money and income and make ends meet.
Right. Okay. Now, to that end, tell us about what you're doing now, Ms. Toya. You're also, I'm going to mention, you're one of the artistic directors and a performing member of my new company, Disco Daddy's Hip Hop Theater. And we'll be having a meeting on that in a couple of weeks because I have the script done.
Mm-hmm.
And we basically will all be stretching out into areas that we don't normally operate in. But besides the hip hop theater, what else are you involved in now, and what do you feel is the future for Ms. Toy? Do you want to exploit acting as far as craft, film, television? You are based here in Hollywood. What's the future hold for you, do you feel?
Oh, the future is bright. Always looking up in a positive direction. I'm the owner of my own label. I started in 2013 along with my business partner. She does all the marketing.
What's the name of the label? Give us the name of the label.
My label is called GO Entertainment, LLC, so G-O-E, Entertainment.
Okay.
As far as I do everything, I'm a production company. I'm also an actress. I'm a radio personality. So as far as the acting goes, I am doing some scripts, and I am working on some things that's like a part of my life. Like, I'm doing a life story, you know, of some things that are dear to me. And I'm also a part of some other things that's happening, a Netflix series that's coming up soon. I have a role in a movie called Callie. I'm working as far as that, but I dropped two albums on my label 2014, one in January, one in December. And I've been really blessed to have so many fans and warriors streaming my music up until this point. And I just dropped Roses, like one of my next singles, just in December of 2016. So I'm getting a lot of great reviews. I'm getting, you know, I got nominated for a Song of the Year for the new song that I dropped. Roses has a sample of Curtis Mayfield. And I'm just blessed to have phenomenal producers and a team of warriors who believe in my craft and believe in the moves that are being made, even though it's a lot of shenanigans going on with the president.
Always.
In position. We know that there's a lot of shenanigans that's overlooked right now more than they were in the past. You know, people are not held accountable for their actions. So, you know, it's a trend, and it'll pass just like everything else, and then it'll come again where people are looking for people that actually want to do good business. I don't know everything, but I know how to protect myself, you know?
Okay, I know that. Now, where can people go to find Ms. Toy Music and to purchase and buy some of your stuff, and give us the name of the, you mentioned two albums, so that they can look for them by name.
Yeah, so on my label, I dropped I Am a Warrior Part 1, I Am a Warrior Part 2, and I Am a Warrior Part 3 is coming soon. And that's all of my music is on iTunes. If you go to iTunes, Tidal, Spotify, Apple, you'll find Ms. Toy, MS.TOI, and you'll find my music everywhere. You know, I make sure that I publish my songs so that they can be available for the listeners, because I know how people are. Their attention span is real short, so I have to just spew out everything that I remember and I learn, you know, so that we can make it clear that we are independent and we are based out of Los Angeles. And we're just making moves as far as just keeping the music alive, whatever is going on. We're kind of like the pulse of it, regardless of how old or how young and, you know, who knows what. It's fun. You should be loving music because you can make money from it. And you should motivate other people if they're trying to do something positive with their lives.
Okay. Okay. This is Miss Toy, y'all, on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. One of the last questions I want to ask you, what advice would you give to young, you're a queen, one of the queens of our culture, but we got some princesses out there coming up. What advice would you give to young black women? And I have to say young black women specifically, because even on that level, white women and black women are still treated differently, you know, as far as opportunities and doors that can be open. What advice would you give to young black women coming into this business?
Coming into this business, you have to know self first. When you ground yourself with who you are and who you're, you know, potentially trying to become, you know, you're a leader. So once you step up and step out, the next black young woman is going to be motivated by you. So, you know, always keep a positive outlook on everything that's going on around you, because it's happening for a reason. And in this business, don't take everything, you know, so serious. It's just, you know, that's how you pay your dues. But I can say, you know, I'm motivated by a lot of the young women and a lot of the vets that's in the business. They continue to go. So I just want to say, stay consistent with what you're doing, be persistent, and make sure you stay professional with everybody that you're dealing with in your music circle.
Wow. And on that note, we're going to have to end this session. I could talk to you all day, Ms. Toy. But I'm glad you decided to do the show and you had the time. And we want to thank you for your contribution to hip-hop. We want your career to blossom as beautiful as the lotus blossom, you know, for the rest of your life. And everything that you dream about, we want all your dreams to come true. Because personally, from the time I've been getting to know you, you're not just an artist. You're inside, you're a beautiful woman, okay? And I must say that, a beautiful artist. Okay.
You inspire me. You paved the way for all of us. Thank you so much, Disco Daddy. We love you.
Thank you. You're very kind. You're very kind. But it's people like you, artists like yourself, who make it a joy for me to be in this business. Okay?
That's what I'm talking about.
I'm looking forward to working with you. I'm looking forward to working with Miss Toy. Miss Toy, y'all, you've been listening to her on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. Thank you, lady. We love you, queen.
Okay, peace and love.
So, wasn't it a great show? Come back next week, every Saturday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Central Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop Show. Man, it's a great one. Epic, epic. See you next week. Bye.